building products that users love. Love. That's a weird word to use for software. Tell me more. I completely agree with it. I have my own story on this that I'm happy to share, but tell me why you use the word love for software.
Software has this an old kind of connotation that it's boring, difficult to use. It takes a lot of brain power. I remember when you're back in companies and software wasn't all in the cloud and you had to have training on software. It was like the most dreaded activity for somebody joining a company is having a software training.
Yeah.
Over the years, UI has become more and more a topic of importance and how good the user experience is. But I think we all have a time where we have used a product and it's really stood out and we thought, wow, that was just a really good experience and it's seamless. And I think that's what SaaS companies should be aiming for. We're at the time where software products should be intuitive completely.
Welcome to SaaS and Scotch. I'm TK, founder at Unstoppable. On this podcast, I talk about the two things I love the most, SaaS businesses and Lagavulin Scotch. On today's episode, we have Peter Loving joining us, founder of UserActive. We'll be digging into his founder story and the incredible work he's doing with other SaaS founders at the intersection of SaaS and user experience. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, TK. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so you and I met because you run this incredible Facebook group called SaaS Founders and Execs. It's got over 8,000 members.
Yep. No, it's good to see you in there. Yeah, it's been growing organically over a few years. So this is a group I love to moderate and I'm an admin there. I started it to connect more with SaaS founders and it's been great for that.
Yeah, it's an incredible group. I really like it because it is outside of the Silicon Valley echo chamber. And what I mean by that is it's global. There's people from all different parts of the world working on all different scales, working on all different ideas. And I find that kind of refreshing because it's not the same group of know-it-alls that you just find on Twitter usually.
Yeah, I find that too, to be honest. There are founders of Silicon Valley SaaS in there, but there are just two people somewhere in Europe who have decided to bootstrap a product. And I've gotten to know a lot of founders from that group and also worked with some, and it is quite refreshing. It has a nice diverse feel to it.
Yeah, agreed. So let's talk a little bit around your story. You're working at UserActive. You're the founder there. How do you explain to grandma during Thanksgiving what UserActive does and what you guys do at UserActive?
So we help SaaS founders create meaningful products that users love. We're not always just working on SaaS, but it's predominantly software. Sometimes we're doing other web applications or something that has a lot of interaction in it. But the reason I say meaningful is that we are fairly selective with the kind of products that we work on. We have to believe in the product. We have to also feel that it's solving a valid problem for the user or achieving something, an existing challenge in a better way. These are really key. And if we believe in the product, then we're able to come and bring passion to it and help make that product the best version that it can be. That's essentially, in a nutshell, that's what we do.
What's an example of a product, without going into specifics or naming names, that you're like, we're not doing this. Like, we just literally don't work on this.
This came from experience, TK. So I've worked on so many products over the years, and there have been occasions where I've regretted being involved in a project. Looking back, I don't regret anything because a lot of the learning outcomes from it were very valuable to me now, and they shaped the approach to work now. But I've seen projects where companies are taking a company that looks successful, something from Silicon Valley that's raised a bunch of money and it seems to be doing well on the surface, and they want to remodel that business, kind of create a very similar product and emulate what that product was doing. Sometimes it's in the same vertical, sometimes it's just transferring it to another vertical. The motivation behind those are usually not solving a great problem or a real market need. The motivation is usually driven by financial incentive of an opportunity or trying to copy something that they thought was successful. I've even worked in one product where we were working on a copy of Foursquare. And as we all know, Foursquare didn't really become the product that it looked like it would be in the beginning. It actually became obsolete, but in the beginning, it had a lot of traction. It had a big go-to-market vehicle behind it. And that was a copycat product. So we worked on that, and the difficulty was pivoting that product away from essentially what was a copy of something else. Looking back at that, I would have assessed this startup and given them my honest feedback, which I felt I did give to them, but I didn't stick behind it strong enough. I didn't say, yeah, Hey, look, I can't work with you if you're not willing to shift from just trying to go for the money grab. And, you know, I'm not saying that happens all the time in SaaS, but it does. And I think that's the wrong motivation for forming a product.
I totally agree. I've come across this lately because you and I are in similar situations now where we service and serve SaaS founders. And for my go-to-market coaching program, it's an application process. So you have to fill out a form to get on a call and I talk to you. And I've realized, like, you got to work with true believers. That's the best phrase that I've come with. There's either true believers or not. And true believers are the founders that have deep domain knowledge on a problem. They really actually care about the problem. They would, even if they weren't getting paid, they would work on solving this problem. And they truly want to build an amazing product, an amazing business. And that's what I call a true believer. And then you have everyone else that's like trying to pivot into product market fit and has no core principles or core tether into why they're really doing this. And you definitely don't want to work with those, not to say they're bad people. It's just, I have zero desire to work with those kind of founders.
Yeah, I feel the same. You have a sense of, in the beginning of discussing somebody's project, whether it ignites some kind of excitement within you or some passion. And usually it's, like you said, the solving the problem. And for me as well, it's the people who that problem is being solved for. How important are they? And if they are the most important thing behind the product decisions, then I always feel like I can get on board and really work for those users.
You were very specific in how you described what you guys do. The last piece of it was building products that users love.
Products users love, yeah.
Meaningful exactly. Products users love, that's right. Love, that's I agree with you, but also I want to understand, especially for the audience, that's a weird word to use for software. Tell me more. By the way, I completely agree with you. I have my own story on this that I'm happy to share, but tell me why you use the word love for software, because that's like objectively is like a weird word to use in the business of software.
Yeah, software has this an old kind of connotation that it's boring, difficult to use. It takes a lot of brain power. I remember when you're back in companies and software wasn't all in the cloud and you had to have training on software. It was like the most dreaded activity for somebody joining a company is having a software training.
Yeah.
Over the years, UI has become more and more a topic of importance and how good the user experience is. But I think we all have a time where we have used a product and it's really stood out and we thought, wow, that was just a really good experience and it's seamless. And I think that's what SaaS companies should be aiming for. We're at the time where software products should be intuitive completely. I know there are very complex products that do need kind of background knowledge and some training as well, but we should be at the point where interactions make sense and they're enjoyable to do. And that's how our thinking comes into it. When we design something, we want users to love the experience. And really a lot of the founders we work with are looking to make changes that will have an impact on utilization or will make customer acquisition easier or that onboarding process easier or will improve retention so they're not struggling with churn during the free trial period or quite soon after somebody upgrades that they end up churning. And a good way to describe how to do that is just make something that they love and they will keep using it. Utilization goes up, retention goes up. And I see that as the product designer's job.
I'll attest to that. I'll never forget when we entered that phase for TouTapp, when users would, whether it's over email or I met them randomly in San Francisco, or we were talking to them on like a support call, they would just describe like, I love Tout. Like, I just love it.
I bet that felt good.
It felt amazing. It felt so good. It was also, it didn't happen overnight. Like we put a lot, like it's interesting. It happened at a point where A, it was pleasantly surprising to hear it. And you're like, oh my God, thank God. Like you love it. B, it's like, what a weird word, love for an inanimate object. Like, and C, it was like, yeah, no, we know why you love it. Cause like we put in really hard work to get that flow right, to get that experience. So we know where that dopamine hit and that love is coming from. Like, I get it. So it was like a burst of all three of those things.
Yeah, when you put that much work into a product and it comes from the right place and you're solving a problem, and it's a real problem somebody has in their business or their life, they subconsciously, they can see that something has had that care and attention put into it. Whatever the experience is, it doesn't have to be a product. Yeah. But yeah, I think it comes across.
I've seen pretty software that's completely non-functional. I've seen really ugly software that is incredibly powerful that I love. I've seen simple software that just blows me away. And I've seen complicated software that is impactful, but I dread using. There's so many different things here, especially in your world. There's user experience, there's design, there's function, there's form. For you working with a SaaS founder in your projects, how do you educate a founder on what to focus on and what's important when they're trying to get activation up and get conversions up, which is the two biggest lifebloods for a company?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have a general process that we go through, and this process is the same for everybody we work with. Fairly early on, this isn't something we always do, but one of the first services that we recommend is a usability assessment. And we jump in, we take a look at the product objectively with a fresh pair of eyes, record a loom, and we produce a report, you know, on recommendations and suggestions for the product. Usually, this marries up with what the founder is experiencing in terms of customer support requests or issues that they know that their users have, as well as things that they would love to see on their roadmap. And the next thing we do is we do a workshop. And in the workshop, we look at, look, what are the things we can do to move the needle the most? We're always looking to do design work that impacts the business. And we might take something specific, like I said before, maybe we're trying to increase utilization. Maybe the product's not sticky enough. We'll look at focusing on that in the workshop and talking about outcomes. So the workshop enables us to get the highest priority items from the founder and also to give some input on where we think there could be some big impact design work that would be fairly easy to do that would make a big move for their product. And that's generally how we set the scene. And it's definitely a dialogue because every founder that comes in, they have a very unique circumstance, whether they've raised funding, whether they're bootstrapped, the different sector they're in, the stage of their business, how people interact with their product. There's always unique circumstances. So that process helps us align ourselves and put our heads together. And the outcome of that is the kind of the brainwork of everybody involved in that workshop. So I think that's an important part of the process. And I also find that founders are very intelligent people. They always have a very good idea of what they need to be working on and what their product needs to do or where it's lacking. It's always good to get that steer from a founder as well. They know their biggest challenges most of all.
Yeah. When is the right time to invest in a service like yours? If you think about the spectrum of your first line of code, still trying to really validate the problem and the solution. There's the initial revenue where you have a flow of people and there's something there, but it's not, all the metrics aren't quite trending. Then there's it's converting, but now you got to just improve all your conversion rates on everything. And then there's the scaling. When is the right time, and maybe even just those four inflection points for a founder, to really start taking a step back and saying, we got to round out our true user experience here?
Yeah, it's interesting because it happens at different points and for different reasons. So one of the companies that we're working with at the moment has a education and learning platform. It's a game-based learning for use in the corporate environment. They use it for training staff, essentially. And one of their difficulties is that they have the product. It's been built. It looks good. But their difficulty is that it's not self-service just yet. So there's a lot of handholding that they need to do. So this is one of the points where you can make a great leap forward with some well-considered design. You might look at designing a whole onboarding flow, some orientation messaging inside the product, some maybe some walkthroughs or some reference material to guide them through and make that experience completely self-service. At that point, they can start scaling now because the efforts they put into scaling before doing all of that will mean that they have quite a big drop-off with their new users or very high demand for customer support. So that's one. And I find, you know, it works at different points, but it just depends on what the challenge is. So right at the other side of the lifespan is a company that have had their product for 16 years. And now it looks, it's very rich in terms of functionality, but it looks dated and the UI looks, it's been, you know, it makes it very difficult because they're in a CRM space which has a lot of newcomers in it, and the other products have very fancy UIs and they look very modern. Yeah. So their challenge is, hey, look, we're finding that it's getting difficult to sell as much as we used to because some of the feedback we're getting is that the UI looks dated. So that project is all about modernizing the product and just producing a really great UI that looks modern and will serve them for years to come. So yeah, different challenges at different stages and the design solution varies depending on where they are.
Yeah.
One thing that has stood out to me, I'll just add, is that a product is something that's always being worked on. It's always iterating. So at any given lifespan of a product, I think there is always some focus that the team have on that requires some kind of consideration towards product design or development or changes or streamlining elements of it or features.
What's the thing that for a lot of my listeners, these are CEOs, founders of early stage SaaS businesses. If you were to give advice to these early stage founders and their engineering teams, as they're building their product, as they're driving to product market fit and that initial growth, what are some things that you wish that more engineering teams did with their product so that it's better equipped and ready to have a better user experience, to do what you guys really do, to really make it where you're like, okay, cool, we can work within this construct?
Yeah, I think it's challenging because the early days seem to me to be a resource challenge. So you might have two founders, they might be technical, and then perhaps they don't have a product person on the founding team. I think as much contact with the end user as possible is something that I highly recommend so that they really understand the problem. And they really also, to me, understanding the problem is one part of it. Another really big part of this is the implementation of how you address that problem, because you could have a problem, but the way you've solved that problem isn't something that the people love or the market doesn't quite want it in that way. So that's really important, understanding how they want their problem to be solved as well, what will make them use it. So I think I'm always a big advocate of selling early on and having the requirement for your product validated by sales and your contact with the commercial side of your industry. And then the other side of that is often the buyers and the users aren't always the same people. It's having a lot of user interviews. It's so funny how many companies that we talk to, they're fairly late in their product stage. They've not really set aside a research period where they're interviewing users actively. That's very common for that not to be happening, but I think that should be happening very early on, showing them early ideas, early prototypes, early wireframes, and at the same time selling. But for me in the very beginning, I think sales is the most important validator. And then from that, anything from that is conversations with users and user testing and research.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir. Like I always say, you will never know if they're telling you the truth until you ask them to swipe the credit card or sign the purchase order. So yeah, the earlier you get in actual sales conversations, even if it's on a wireframe and $1,000 pilot, the better off you're going to be, because as soon as you ask, hey, cool, would you want to sign up for $1,000 pilot? We'll refund your money if we don't meet your needs, and we'll make an early advisory board member, just roll out the red carpet. Even then, if they're not willing to take you up on that offer, they're probably lying to you. It's not that great of an idea, not that urgent of a problem, not that important of a problem. And the sooner you validate that, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, and the same with the user interviews, because when you actually get on conversations with users, they say a lot of things that could lead you down the wrong path or have you designing and building features that they don't really want. They might tell you they want them, but they wouldn't use them if you built them. Mm-hmm. So you have to be super careful with your resource. Resource is limited, like I said. So you also have to be really careful with your decisions about what you decide to build. And also validating your feedback becomes quite important. One kind of clever way to do user interviews is if you split them up into groups. You have groups of people who are not yet users, but you'd like them to be. You have a group of new users who are just getting familiar with your product. You have a group of existing users, and then maybe also a group of users who've recently cancelled or didn't work out for them. And that way you get a really good cross-section and you can start cross-referencing answers. And that's one good way to sense check the kind of feedback you're getting and also get a good idea of the user's life.
When you think about the magic of what you do, and I know it's a lot of these little things all into one, and I accept that, but if you were to pick one thing, what is it that helps you create products that users love? Is it the beauty of it? Is it the way you lay out the interface? Or is it the deep research understanding of the user? What's the one thing that really is the game changer in getting people to love the product you're creating?
To me, it's about getting inside their head and seeing it how they see it. Yeah. And if you can do that, and you also have the ability to use critical thinking, you can start to design something with a real sense of logic about it. You might have seen products where they've tried to design for a problem and it's not quite right. There's something about it that isn't working, that the flow is not logical or it's not intuitive. But getting really into the heads of users and the person who has the problem, then stepping out. And for me, my background, I don't design so much now as I consult and mostly involved in business development for what we're doing. But back when I was designing, the most important thing for me was understanding a task and then creating a design for that was as intuitive as possible, that didn't need any thinking. Everything on the page, every interaction had a very sound reason why it was there. And anything that interfered with that was removed, just creating a real simple experience that's completely intuitive. Apple always did that really well. So Apple products are a good example of that. They did that quite well. But when you see it, you appreciate it. The difficult thing to know about that is how much work went into that process to get it. What one of our clients told us recently, they were working on simplifying an ordering form. And they said, simplicity is the highest form of sophistication. And that's because it's actually so difficult to achieve. A really intuitive, logical interaction takes a ton of work. So there's that kind of thinking behind it, understanding the user, and then the sweat. And another saying that they've always said to us was, design is like 5% inspiration and 95% perspiration. It's sweat work. And that's the stuff that you want. That work, when you've done it, it looks invisible. So users they just use it and it's completely logical and intuitive, but actually a ton of work went behind making it that way.
I agree. I think this is what company building is really about. I run a go-to-market program. You run the user experience advisory. And in both cases, a lot of the work that we're really doing is trying to tap into that inner narrative of our user. And on the go-to-market side, it's how do you tap into the inner narrative and speak to it directly where they're like, oh my God, they get me. And for you, it's how do you then take that and build the product where when they are sitting in front of the controls of it, they're like, oh my God, I love this. They get me. Like, that's what I think really gets you to a successful product, which then turns into a successful business, which then turns into a successful movement and everything else that we're trying to create here.
Yeah, I think so. That is fundamental, isn't it? And one of the reasons why the scratch your own itch kind of product companies do so well, and like you mentioned earlier, TK, about having the deep domain knowledge, it's that the knowledge gap between you and other users has been minimized so much because you relate, because you know their tasks inside out. So if you're coming into a different industry, like we have to do this fairly often because we're working with companies across verticals and different sectors all the time, but we have to jump in and get deep into their working life, their challenges, how they operate their workflows, and then that's one of the things that makes this so exciting for me, because it's always about learning in the end. Yeah. So I'm always quite stimulated by learning. I love that process. And when you're essentially getting to know what users need, it's learning, and then you get to apply your expertise on top of that.
That's one of the most unfairly great aspects of this job, working with different SaaS founders and getting exposure to such different domains, different users, different products, different problems, different industry. It's so cool. It's almost an unfair advantage.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. You start to pick up patterns and that you can apply across different markets, which becomes really powerful.
Yeah. The beauty of this is that there are a lot of things that apply to SaaS. All of the common metrics that SaaS companies have to run, the models that they're running their metrics on, and they're looking to see how their growth patterns are. It's transferable, but you're seeing a lot of different sectors. For me, one client that we worked with that was super interesting recently, they developed a product for the liquid and gas tanker industry. You have those huge ships that they'll travel across the ocean, and they're transferring liquid and gas. And every port, they have to monitor what cargo they're taking on board. And there's so many metrics behind it. I couldn't believe it when I saw this industry. They're taking pressure gauges. The cargo that they carry changes in pressure at different times. So they may have more or less kind of that they're measuring, and they lose some of this on the way due to changes in pressure. There's just a million and one metrics. And then this company had built a SaaS to make that easier, because it's quite an archaic industry. They're still doing things on spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. Suddenly we're being exposed to seeing that kind of industry, and it's just fascinating. That's one of the things that I love about it, seeing lots of different work situations that I would never see outside of SaaS.
Peter, so many interesting insights here, and I feel like we could go on forever. I want to end on this one. Given that you get exposure to so many different types of founders and CEOs and product leaders, you get this cross-section, as we just talked about. For those of the listeners who are actively doing the Shawshank crawl to product market fit, to the next stage of growth, what's the one piece of advice you would give them and that would help them navigate this path a bit better? Because you've seen people that have gone through it, that have successfully gone through it, that have not. What's the one piece of advice you would give from your perspective?
So it's always going to be from product design point of view. So I don't always relate too well to the SaaS founder, because I haven't been one personally myself. I know a lot of theory about it, but for me, I think take some time to keep the product simple and understand the user as much as you can, and connect that with your route to market. Have that sales activity going from the beginning, and let that be the thing that informs your product decisions and where you take it, because ultimately that's where your product market fit comes from, having that, you know, channel where the sales are coming in.
That's awesome. I'm smiling. We're not doing, obviously, releasing the video, but like, I'm smiling, and it's because I've been doing a few of these interviews, and the patterns of people saying put distribution first, let distribution dictate your product roadmap, and then create the intuitive software that solves the really important problem coming out of the distribution. It's the patterns are so interesting that it keeps coming up over and over, even though that's not how people operate. Most people are stuck in the one more feature trap. Let me just build one more feature and it's going to be awesome. And then it's going to go boom. It goes in the complete other direction. So that's really sage advice, and it runs with the pattern of what everyone else, a lot of others that are experienced, have been saying, just like you. Peter, this was awesome. I really appreciate you taking some time to spend with us today. For founders who want to learn more about what you guys do or connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, just check us out on our website, useractive.io. And we've got some information there. And you can also get in touch through the site.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for joining us today. This was awesome. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, TK. I've loved the chat, really enjoyed it myself. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. If you liked this episode, please let us know by tweeting out this episode and mentioning us. There's a click to tweet link in the episode description. And lastly, remember, everyone needs a strategy for their life and their business. When you're with us, yours will be unstoppable. I'm TK, and I'll see you in the next episode.